This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And you're tuned into The Morning Run right here on BFM 89.9. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Koo Soo Chuang and Joyce Goh. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Guten Morgen.
All right. Once again, there, Chuang trying to impersonate the ever-friendly German in our midst. It is Tuesday, August 28th, just a couple more days before the GST holiday is over and we enter the final third of 2018. Plenty of exciting stuff to look forward to, I guess. But let's get you caught up on some news that happened while you slept. Let's start over there in the States. The US and Mexico have reached a trade deal paving the way to replace NAFTA. Now, we know that US President Donald Trump has very often spoken about his disdain for the NAFTA deal and looks like he might get his way with this new deal with Mexico.
Yeah, apparently this new 16-year deal, I think it's going to be reviewed every 6 years, foresees Mexico buying a lot more American farm produce than before. Of course, this is within Trump's, his lens, yeah? So obviously, for whatever he signs, it's going to be positive.
True. Well, this plan will not cap imports of light vehicles from Mexico, but keeps the steel and aluminum tariffs that are already in place. So, yeah, and it must be approved by the Congress there.
Do you guys know that this wall between America and Mexico has been built? I've seen videos of it. It's ridiculous. So there's actually six or seven different types of wall. So, there's various contractors being called in, and then they propose certain different designs. And it's crazy.
Wow, so it's like a patchwork of walls or so different motifs and stuff?
There's various galleries you go to. And then you can choose between this design and that. And then the thing is, because there's a coastline, which America obviously has, right, with the Mexicans, the wall doesn't end. The wall, basically, because if you have the wall that ends on land, you just swim across, you know what I'm saying? Or just walk across on the beach.
I think that's the border between California and Mexico. Right. So it goes into the ocean.
So near the Baja, right?
Yeah.
So the Baja Peninsula. But the wall goes into the sea and then you just swim around the wall. This is so stupid, right?
Well, I mean, they have dug under the border fence to get into the U.S. before. But nevertheless, we have this news. We'll see how this develops and whether or not Canada could get involved in this somehow as well. Moving on to other stories, we also have news out of Northern Asia, whereby a Japanese tourist detained for an unspecified crime in North Korea is reported to have been freed. The name is Tomoyuki Sugimoto, who is thought to be a videographer in his 30s, has now arrived in China. Now, that's according to Japan's Kyodo News Agency.
Yeah, so the reports of his arrest, I think it first emerged earlier this month, and North Korea didn't say why he was arrested, only that he had broke some laws there. But Japanese media said that he could have been filming a military facility and that could have triggered his arrest.
Yeah, so, my wife wanted to go to North Korea. She says, visa free.
Really?
Before, right? Oh, visa free, we should go there. I said, not in your life.
Yeah,
sorry,
no
night lottery. Yeah, you can go there. It's a bit like Hotel California. You can go there, but you might never return, right? Seriously, because this guy, this Sugimoto guy, not a dessert, by the way, a real person.
thought to be a videographer, not a dessert. Yeah. But yes, go on, Chuan.
So according to the story, BBC, North Korea can arbitrarily arrest anybody they want, right? This guy, this American guy, Otto Warmbier, right? Just waited to do what you will. He just disappeared.
Actually, for Sugimoto, right, he was detained while with a tour group.
Mm-hmm.
So he was with a tour group. It wasn't like he was randomly on his own,
correct,
just walking about. Yeah.
Sorry, not in your life, man. I can find a lot better ways to spend my time than go to a place where you can just arbitrarily get arrested.
Yeah, well, this comes on the back of just a month ago, North Korea handed over remains of U.S. soldiers killed in the Korean War. So perhaps there's
It's only about 70 years later.
So perhaps there's a softening of stance by the North Korean regime of the day. Well, again, there's something to note. Those are just some developments that happened while you sleep. Coming up in just a bit, we'll then talk about, speaking about sleeping, we're going to talk about roommates in college and whether or not them being chosen at random could actually yield life-changing benefits. That's all coming up on The Morning Run here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Flashlight by Parliament, and you're tuned in to The Morning Run. That was a pretty funky tune there from 1977. Chong, I'm sure during those years, you were in college, weren't you?
No, no. What do you think, I'm Sharad Kutin?
Well, okay, so well, you, Chuang, Joyce Goh, and myself, we all actually got our undergraduate degrees abroad, so I'm sure we've got plenty of stories about our dear roommates during college. I mean, those were some really, really formative years, and I'm sure
Formative.
Formative, thank you.
Correcting my... you see, that's the problem. See, because you're American, I'm not American, I'm English.
And I'm Penangai.
Not like that's indicative of the level of education I got in the States. But moving on. So I'm looking at this article on Quartz.com right now, talking about the value, the life-changing benefits of having random roommates in college. Now, you've got Duke University, that's in America, North Carolina, the state where I worked in, who is looking to reinstate random roommate assignments for the incoming class of 2022. Why? Because they recognize the value in it, everything from improving the fellow roommates' academic scores to just assimilation and perhaps even unity. So perhaps based on your respective experiences, did you find that to be a formative experience, a very important aspect of your college careers, that you had these random roommates, as opposed to, say, choosing your roommates beforehand like they've been doing in the past via Facebook and various social online platforms, and then having that certainty, that comfort in knowing that your roommate isn't a crazy one?
Well, you know, I've been abroad. I have different experiences. I was in boarding school in England, then I went on a twinning program in college to university. You know, when I did my twinning program in Sunway College, right, all the Malaysians, because they spent year one in Malaysia, year two, year three, they go abroad, right?
Right.
They just stick around with each other.
Yep,
they just
agree.
Eat the nasi lemak, the bak kut teh, they talk about it. It's one of Malaysia, but it's not KL, it's a bloody Leicester, right? And, you know, the Malaysian students are very, very fond of hanging out because they're familiar with it. And the honkies as well, right?
Mm. But and Singaporeans.
And the Singaporeans. Mm. But when I was in school in England, I had no choice but to assimilate because I was the only, kind of like Asian guy there. I was seen as this anomaly. And that's when I got stuck into the deep end. And that's when those experiences really stick with you for life.
Well, for me, yeah, I was one of those who went overseas and kind of hung out with your friends.
The fellow Malaysians. Yeah. I mean, defeat the purpose
I came back with a different experience. I made lifelong friends. And until today, I must say, the group of us, we still meet up every weekend, if we can. I mean, every other weekend. Because we have kids now. Well, so every other weekend, we do catch up. We have dinners together. So we have a friend. He's really good at cooking. And we all stayed. We're neighbors, so he would cook. So we will share groceries and the cost of it, and he will cook, and then we'll just take turns to wash up and all that, and then we just form a lifelong friendship there. Different experiences. Yeah. I mean, I do agree. Randomized roommates might help, but for me, I didn't go down that path.
See, here's the thing, though, because I agree with Zhuang that it was the same experience I had in the States, whereby you see international students all just hang out by themselves, and then the locals kind of did their thing. I, for some reason, was assimilated into the local Virginian population as well. So I must say that the 4 years that I spent in college in the States was so much more colorful, so much more immersive, because I was able to, for example, there was a foster family, a family that they attach you with, just so that you can, break,
monotony.
Break from monotony, right? As opposed to, the friends, I'm sure they are very dear friends of yours, Joyce, but you could probably find them around the corner here.
But I definitely, these are our friendships made that, you treasure. And we had friends from there were Aussies as well, all that, you learn about the culture there and all that. But I don't know, I feel that whether or not it's local or from whichever country they are from, friendships made during your college years and uni, they or even school days. Right. They last, I mean, for a long time. And it's like, you know, in hashtag for reals.
Well, I guess one thing we can say for certainty, at least for me, I do wish I was back in my college days. Those were my best years, I think, at least for my follicle count. WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Tell us about your experiences, if you did spend some time in college overseas, and let us know about those horror roommate stories that you may have. All right, we'll be back with more right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Modern English with I Melt With You, a track from 1982 then. Again, that's a pre-Han era. I won't tell you exactly how old I am. So you're tuned into the Morning Run here on BFM. Best four ministers? Question mark. So we have this story here about our good old defense minister, YB Matsabu, who was part of this engaging Twitter conversation online, whereby you got Hot FM, which is one of the top Malay stations here in Malaysia, that actually invited Matsabu to their show via Twitter. Now, he responded by saying that, yeah, he's open to it on one condition. And that condition being Hot FM must play his favorite song. So there was this ensuing conversation. People on the Twitterverse are trying to figure out what exactly Matsabu's favorite song is. But then the question to ponder here, you know, for us this morning is, you know, whether or not is it incumbent on these ministers or politicians and policymakers in this Malaysia Baru era to actually be more engaging with the media as opposed to, you know, perhaps setting up some of these conditions before they actually appear on the show?
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, there's two ways of looking at this, right? One is with the serious side, one is with the not so serious side. The not so serious side is that
the Matsabu side.
He's a funny fellow, like, yeah, yeah, sense of humor. Do you know what I mean? He takes things in his stride. But the serious side, of course, yeah, you know, in this new era of Malaysia, I don't know why you say Baharu, Han. Baharu, so, Han.
Well, it is, you can do both, but anyways, that's a discussion for another day.
Well, anyway, so in this new era of Malaysia Baru, yeah, it's all about transparency, it's all about accountability, it's all about being incumbent to come on air and do your mandatory media interviews, right? There shouldn't be no conditions.
True, but you'd be surprised how many ministers are quite reluctant to come on air. I mean, these are all behind the scenes, but yeah, I find, from my experience, a lot of them are a lot more comfortable with print rather than broadcast.
Because print you can control.
Mm-hmm. Right,
when
and you
can
edit
air,
it.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's a recording, it's you and your voice, and that's it. People know. People can sense that you're either lying or not lying.
But I feel like it's
genuine, not genuine.
That's true, and I feel. But on air, right, on broadcast, it's a lot more personal, and you can tell.
Correct.
Yeah,
and that's why
it's a good. It's a good way to for these ministers to you know keep all
which
of
is
us
okay
informed
if you're telling
and get
the truth.
To know them.
Which is okay if you're telling the truth and you really feel for the people. But if you're not.
Look, I mean, because with radio and by extension TV as well, because you're hearing the person, right? That person then will be more vulnerable, right? And it's how, like you mentioned, Chuang, how you say it, or perhaps the pause before you answer a certain question and the tone that
the
you
tone.
Use, right? Mm. Because when you're reading it in print, right, you are reading it in the voice, as per the voice in
it's
your
how
head.
You're interpreting it in print. It's two-dimensional.
Right.
Right. You've been on TV, honey. You're a handsome fella.
I know, thank you very much. My looks are wasted on radio.
But you know, on TV, it's a double whammy because it's how you look and how you sound.
Right.
Mm. On radio, it's just how you sound. But
and
TV,
your body language, right?
Body
for
language
TV,
all
yeah,
come in.
Yeah.
Like.
Right, because most of our communication is actually non-verbal, which you then capture on TV. But then, you know, so coming back to this story here, you know, Matsabu here. So, you know, again, whether it's in jest or not, I mean, should we be seeing, you know, more of these ministers, you know, coming up? Because, I mean, fair credit to the ministers who have come on the Breakfast Grill over the last 3 months or so. But our wish list is still there, mm-hmm. and I think they're still in the single digits, though.
So I'm talking to Gobe next week, apparently. Tuesday, yeah. Ooh. We're recording on Tuesday.
Way to pre-sell that. But
yeah, you know. So
this
I'm
is
expecting,
for BFM.
we're expecting, yeah, yes. As opposed to the BBC.
Well, but yeah, I mean, it'll be good for ministers to come on air. Not sure what is holding them back. It's not just ministers, though. Even corporate captains, they prefer print.
Right. Corporate captains, it seems. Corporate chieftains.
Yeah. They're like,
captains of industry.
Are they shy of the mic or what?
Yeah, sometimes it's a language thing, sometimes it's a cultural thing, sometimes, right. You know.
But I guess to be fair, you know, as the, you know, the current ministers are trying to come to terms with their respective portfolios, I can understand them being inundated with this new set of responsibilities, you know, so perhaps we should cut them some slack, but I'm making this open call here for ministers and people associated with them. Send them our way to the Breakfast Grill. You know where to find us. This is BFM 89.9. We've got Sabrina Magdalene standing by to give you the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. But first, here's Postal Service with Such Great Heights here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Dr. Feelgood with Roxette. You are tuned in to the Morning Run. I've got Koo Soo Chuang, Joyce Goh, and myself, Tan Chung Han, keeping you company all the way till 10 a.m. on this Tuesday, August 28th. Now, thank you so much for all the tweets and WhatsApp messages that have come in over the last few minutes. Speaking to Mikhail and also Socialist, at Socialist, that's the Twitter handle. Don't know whether that person is actually a socialist. Yes, we are well aware of the humor that Mat Sabu intended there. We were just broadening the discussion about the relationship between ministers and the media, right, here in this Malaysia Baharu, or as Chuang insists, Malaysia
I don't insist, Baharu. Baharu is Baharu.
Yeah, there's a different connotation there, but similar, same, but different. Also, thanks to Hasudin.
Nick Hasudin.
Yeah, Nick Hasudin, yes, who is a very loyal listener and a regular commentator on The Morning Run. Thank you so much. Saying that we should give a big warning to those turning up for the Breakfast Grill. They will be literally grill. I don't know if we're literally grill or guests, but they don't walk out of here with charred marks.
Charbroiled.
Yeah. They'll be grilled if they don't prepare themselves with proper thoughts, strategy, and facts. Hashtag fine, to be honest. Thank you, Nick Hasudin, as always, for your thoughts. And we've got other messages as well. Thank you. You can always join this conversation by WhatsApping us 018-789-8899. Again, 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, let's turn our attentions to the agenda for the morning, whereby we consider this report by the Council of Eminent Persons. So the Prime Minister has said that now this report that the CEP is to hand to him after their 100-day tenure may not be made public. Now, there's been plenty of discussions around the role of the CEP and what their purpose is in this Malaysia Baru. But you know, as voters, should we be demanding that this CEP report be made public? What do you guys think?
I think so. I think on the balance of on the balance of conveniences, to coin a legal term. And I understand what Professor Jomo is saying, you know, because in terms of the repercussions, especially to the corporate sector. But you can provide a taste. I mean, I think there's a fine balance to be struck. If you are the government and you want to give to the public a taste of what the CEP entailed, then you can. You can produce an executive summary. You don't have to produce the actual details, and you don't have to produce actual names, maybe, but you can mention maybe sectors, which is what a lot of fund managers and analysts do in the first place. But yeah, I think it's incumbent upon the new government to show that they really mean what they mean and walk the talk when it comes to accountability and transparency.
I agree. I mean, the summary would be great, and also their recommendations moving forward, what they have recommended to the PM, what are the issues. You don't have to go into detail as Chuang says, because what Jomo is saying is that, you know, some items are sensitive. He's saying that, you know, there are things that are very delicate. Information can be abused. We get that, but
yeah, I mean, for example, if you trade that information on the public market, yeah, you can. Or you can thwart a deal, for example. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, just to be clear here, Jomo, being Jomo Kwame Sundar, who is the former member of the Council of Eminent Persons. He was there for those 100 days. A very vocal economist, also a very illustrious one. But then when it comes to governments, right, and how they go about with the business of the day, and this is any government anywhere in the world, isn't there a level of opacity that is required of them? You know, I'm just trying to kind of pierce this idea that governments are just supposed to air every single detail out there.
No, you're right. No, you're right, for sure. And, you know, for example, when it comes to military tactics and strategy, for sure. But when it comes to, you know, Malaysia is in a very, very, very significant time in its history, in a very short history, right? For the first time in 61 years, there's been a new government. There is a chance to upheave the previous system, which has been riddled with all kinds of flaws. And it's an opportunity for the new government to show something. It's a chance for them to put a land to draw a line in the sand.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And it's not airing everything, you know, it's just a summary. And it's also to give us an idea of where we are, the state of the nation, as we say, you know, some details of it. It doesn't need to be everything, but it'll be great to hear what did they talk about, what were the things that were, you know, what were the issues or even positive things or what were the pros and cons of where we are today and the recommendations moving forward. You have, I think there's this comment from the Prime Minister on the CEP report. He said, you know, the job is to investigate and report to me. Whether I accept the report or not is my business.
Okay, so you know, that's the authoritarian top-down approach that Mahathir is famous for.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, at the end of the day, these five people were chosen for their illustrious and backgrounds. And for them to put forth a set of recommendations to the Prime Minister to then decide and then to administer them to the ministers to execute. But by making part of the CEP, or at least a flavour of it public, it also gives us a chance to realise and to make a decision on what kind of contribution these five individuals made. Because one of them is a businessman in Robert Kwok, one was a professor in KS Jomo, one was a Petronas former CEO, Hassan Merican, former central bank governor, and very respected with Zeti. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a chance for us, the public, to say, wow, these people really made this thing because, you know, they spent 3.5 months in the job. And they met a lot of people, they made a lot of decisions. I mean, they made a lot of findings.
Right, and also, you know, if there's any ensuing policy changes made by the Prime Minister and if that was influenced somehow by the CEP's report, then at least we can get an idea about how the thought process or what was the rationale for those ensuing policies.
Or not.
Right, or not. There we go. So let us know what you think. 018-789-8899. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Would you want to know the contents of the 100-day report by the Council of Eminent Persons? Let us know what you think, and we'll be back with more right here on The Morning Run on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Lemonheads with If I Could Talk, I'd Tell You. Now, you have a voice, and you can always be part of this conversation on The Morning Run. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, we also have this new voice. We have a voice in this Malaysia Baru, you know, engaging with policymakers. And, you know, given the slew of new policies or overhauls or reviews that they are engaging in right now, one of them being this soda tax. Now, the Prime Minister has confirmed that Putrajaya is looking into a tax on sugary drinks. The idea is to encourage healthy living and, you know, basically reduce sugar consumption here in Malaysia, because we have often highlighted this. Malaysia is, I believe, the most obese country in Asia.
Yeah, hey, let's not forget that before he was a politician, Tun Mahathir was a doctor and he spent quite a number of years in his own practice. But, you know, the soda tax is quite similar to the tobacco tax and alcohol
tax. Syntax.
Yeah, in the sense, well, in technical terms, it's called a Pigovian tax, right? A Pigovian tax is a tax on something which causes negative externalities, for example. Mm-hmm. So a cigarette smoker, a tax on tobacco might be used to curb smoking because it causes cancer. And a soda tax is a tax meant to reduce the amount of diabetes cases in the country, which therefore also has an implication on the health sector. So it's interesting because it does two things, right? In one fell stroke, it increases revenue for the country and it also addresses the number of diabetes cases in the country.
Potentially.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know, but recently a think tank has cautioned the new government against implementing the soda tax, although it welcomes the ongoing discussion to reduce sugar consumption.
Why?
Well, they say in a way it's because it's, you know, you should invest in the health of people, but whether or not, you know, the government should get involved.
It's
in this.
The classic nanny state argument, right? Mm. Is the government too big? Do they have a right to influence your personal choices? If you want to drink 35 bottles of Coke a day, well, then it's your prerogative, right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's the flip side of the argument.
It's whether or not if they put the taxes, the soda tax or whatever taxes, will that deter people from drinking
Correct.
that Correct. Or I mean, whether or not, does it deter people from actually participating in that non-healthy living?
Yeah, I mean, so you might say with excise duties on, say, on alcohol, for example, or, you know, impecunious taxes on tobacco, has it reduced the number of smokers in the country? Probably not, because people love those two habits too much, right?
Right. And, I mean, you just got to look at India, for example, under their four-tier GST system.
They've got four tiers.
That's right. So at the highest, at the highest band, I believe their sin tax rate is about 18%. You know, and whether or not it actually goes towards curtailing human behavior. So, yeah, I mean, the question here is, if we broaden out this discussion here, really, is at what point or to what extent does the government have in terms of your lifestyle choices, you know, as opposed to letting that individual suffer the consequences? If you drink, according to this article, or at least according to the Prime Minister, 6 to 7 bottle drinks a day, and then you suffer the repercussions, then you got to deal with it.
Well, according to the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, they're saying that it would be better for Malaysia to follow UK by imposing the tax at manufacturer's level rather than at the point of retail.
Why?
So they're saying that
I'm for all in favor of the soda tax. I mean, to be honest, I think Malaysians consume way too much sugar.
The point of where do you put the taxes? That's what they're saying.
Now, and personally, I agree as well. You know, because it's very hard to argue against these kinds of taxes for all the merits that you pointed out there, Chuang. Right?
Yeah, you go to a mama store. You ask for a teh tarik. You can get dizzy from the first sip because it's ridiculous. I mean, there's some tea in that sugar. You know what I mean? One have some tea with your sugar drink.
I guess some of the pushback that I've seen from other segments of Malaysian society, you know, who are perhaps not so health conscious, is that because our diets are, you know, just so sugary to begin with, so if you roll out these kinds of taxes, say on sugar, etc., it will just exacerbate the rising pressures on the cost of living, right?
So don't drink sugar, lah. Can I just have a personal example?
As if it's that simple. I think that's the argument that some of these people are making.
I think it is, right? If it's too expensive, don't consume it. If it's too expensive to smoke, don't buy cigarettes. Don't smoke, right? I mean, look, Mahathir just came back from China, okay? A 5-day visit, you know, chock-a-block, you know, up to his eyeballs in meetings. He was walking through the delegations and conferences like, you know, he was like a man half his age. Leslie Lau, Joyce, who we spoke to yesterday from the Malay Mail, he came back with a cold. He's less than half Mahathir's age.
Yeah, now, he said that the Prime Minister just had a spring in his step.
Yeah, well, whether or not that's due to the consumption of sugar, well, that's still a question mark. But again, let us know what you think. 018-789-8899.
Yeah, it's not consumption of sugar. It's the way he leads his lifestyle. Yeah, it's very healthy.
Okay, we've got the 7 a.m. news bulletin coming up, but taking us all the way to the top of the hour, we've now got Our Deal by Best Coast here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station. 28.